The views and opinions expressed on this show are purely the views and opinions of the person who made them, and do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the show's commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. As the restriction on our God-given right to free speech manifests itself throughout the world, we are inspired by Jesus Christ's immortal words, "And ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." And we reserve the rights to all our words. Thank you, and now enjoy the show.
Let me ask you this. It's a group that at least people perceive it to be anti-Semitic.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Well, it isn't. Well, it may be now, you know, and so I can't address it as it relates to now. That would be disingenuous on my part.
But back then?
But back then, no. I mean, its primary leader back then was T.D. Bingham, and T.D.'s Jewish.
Jewish.
You know, one of the first things I noticed on him was a big old Star of David tattooed on him. He actually saw me looking at it and said, "I'm Jewish, but I'm not a practicing Jew, but I'm proud of it." Mm-hmm. And he was. And there was no reason for him not to be. In this day and age, relative to the anti-Semitic characteristic, I think it applies tenfold. You know, that also applies to, I think, any hate group that exists in this country today, whether it's white supremacy or some form of militant group. You know, we talk about ideology. You know, hate seems to be the primary goal on the part of those groups by way of how they motivate themselves.
To learn who rules over you, simply find out who you are not allowed to criticise. You are listening to ACH. I'm Andy, your co-host. Today is Sunday, so it's time for the Limeys, for a show entitled The Students Are Revolting, with my co-host Maleficus Scott. So let's bring them up right now. Maleficus, are you with us?
I'm back with you. Yeah, I'm back with you and the good listeners, Andy. It's lovely to be back on this very, very bright but wet Sunday morning.
Well, it's wet here. I wouldn't say bright. It's 10:15 a.m. UK time on Sunday, April the 28th, 2024, just to timestamp the show. And I've noticed in the last week it has really got cold, and I'm really getting annoyed because it's going to be May in 3 days and it feels like winter, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Has been a bit of a cold snap. Mind you, we did have a bit of a warm snap last week, but I was thinking back, and I've had this conversation a lot actually recently with dog fellow dog walkers and that kind of thing. You think back to 2020 when they decided that they were going to lock the whole world down. And I don't know what it was like for the rest of the world, but Britain had blazing sunshine from February onwards. And right now, I think we've had about 5-6 warm days this year.
Yeah, no, and they even admitted it was something that came out recently with the Dubai floods. You know, they've been saying for years, all that these people talking about weather modification, they're conspiracy theorists and all that. And they're admitting it in the mainstream media that they do that.
Yeah, so I remember one person I spoke to when I said, yeah, you think back a few years, back to when we were all locked down, we had blazing sunshine pretty much from that day onwards. And the lady looked at me, she said, yes, but we needed it, didn't we? And I thought, yes, we did.
Well, it makes you think, something that I thought when I saw that Dubai, what was it, 2 years of their regular rainfall in an hour or something ridiculous, I thought, they've done something in that country, or they were planning to do something that the people that really run things in the world didn't like, and that was their little warning shot. I also felt that when that years ago, Iceland was one of the only countries to put their bankers on trial, I think in the 2008 crash. And then suddenly this volcano started erupting over there. And I always thought, obviously I've got no evidence as such. I just, based upon the way they behave, and I'm like, I wouldn't be surprised if there's more to that than meets the eye.
But it certainly gets the cogs whirring. That's to be fair. It gets the cogs whirring when you realize how corrupt the world is. I mean, and it might be outlandish to a lot of people. They can't modify the weather, or they can't make volcanoes or whatever. But you know what? The world is a blooming strange place, and it gets stranger by the day the more you know. So, you know, the jury's out for me.
Well, I remember hearing years ago that in the Vietnam War, they were seeding clouds of the enemy, or the enemy, the Viet Cong, weren't they? So the Americans would seed clouds so that, you know, it would rain when they were trying to, you know, get up a hill or construct something or something like that. It's a very vague description, yeah. But if any of you want to look that up, it was that, and then, of course, it was Dr. Nick Begich, Angels Don't Play That Harp, and he was a lovely guy. I only ever spoke to him once because he was in Alaska and they had like a 11 or 12 hour time difference to the UK. So, you know, Florida's 5 hour difference, California's 8 hour difference. But yeah, 11 or 12 hour, and it was really difficult. We managed to record a show together and he was a really pleasant chap. But yeah. Anyway, that clip you just heard during the show intro segment was taken from Michael Franzese's show entitled Former Aryan Brotherhood Leader Incarcerated for 45 Years, Sit Down with Michael Thompson, which was originally broadcast on December the 22nd, 2022, that you can find on Michael Franzese's YouTube channel. And you spell Franzese, Franzese. And with regard to today's show title and show image, well, Maleficus, what are your thoughts on these student revolts or protests across American college campuses today? Over to you.
Well, cause and effect, part of it. Obviously, I've heard bits and bobs about this. It's not something I've really looked into, but I'm aware. I'm obviously going through all the news clips and everything, or clippings this week and over the last couple of days, they are calling for certain laws to be brought in America, aren't they? Which I find very interesting. But one thing that really irritates, and it frustrates the hell out of me over here, why the hell are we flying Palestinian flags in the UK? Why the hell are they flying Palestinian flags in the US? Don't you sort out your own home first? So we've got a bunch of people over here enticing people to stand up and support Palestine. You know, what's happening over there is dreadful. What's happening in any war-torn country is dreadful. In fact, any unnecessary loss of life, it's like David Irving called World War II innocenticide, because it's the innocent people that always suffer in all this. But why do we need people from another nationality over here in the UK, and likewise over there in the US? Why do you need people from another nation entirely telling you how you should be behaving in your country and what you should be protesting and what you shouldn't? So my take on it is charity starts at home, Andy. Sort your own home out before you start dealing with what's going on elsewhere. So, yeah, that's my take on it. It's a bit blunt, I'm sorry. But, you know, and it's not like I'm downplaying the plight of these people in war-torn countries, wherever that may be. But the very fact of the matter is charity starts at home.
Yeah, I think my thoughts, based on what you just said there, it'd be interesting to see the amount of those people that wave Palestinian flags, for example, how many of them would also happily wave an American flag for the ones in America, or a, you know, United Kingdom flag for the ones over here. You know, the take-up rate, I think, would be quite low, but I may be wrong. Maybe they're all very patriotic to their respective countries, whether it be the United States and the United Kingdom as well, but I'm not sure about that. So, anyway, I just want to draw your attention to today's traditional Christian message entitled Hatred of Evil, a 6-minute show written by Dr. Peter Hammond that I put up earlier today on achshow.com, so please check that out. And before you say, why would I want to listen to a 6-minute show? Look on the bright side, that's 3 times as long as most TikTok videos, and anyway, people's attention spans are waning, including my own. So, Maleficus, what have you been up to?
this week, Andy, I have been for eye tests. I've been busy with work. Do you know what? I went for my eye test yesterday. It took about an hour and a half just sitting around and stuff. I'm 48 years old, and the optometrist said, have you had glasses before? And I said, no. And he said, well, you're doing all right. He said, normally by the age of about 45, people start needing glasses. He said, you're 48. I said, well, I probably needed them at 45, to be honest. He said, well, you've done a great job in putting it off.
You have, so, absolutely. I'll just jump in there. I was about the same age. What happened first with me was I had that eye test around that time, 45, and the guy said to me, he says, well, they're sort of optional. There's a little bit there. And then I thought, well, I found these glasses that were NHS only back then, and they were like £20. And I thought, well, the eye test is costing me more than them, so I might as well buy them, but I'm just buying them. I don't plan to use them. I know it doesn't make a lot of sense, but, you know, how many clothes have you bought that you've kind of spent more on and you've really never used? And then it was over a few years that I felt, and then I started using them, and then I needed to... once you start to use them, then you're on that gravy train. It's, you know, you're not going to get off it, basically. But sorry to interrupt, but please continue.
Yeah, well, yeah, I wish mine were £20. I'm 185 quid lighter, mate. Crikey.
Wow.
How times have moved on.
Well, I went to a Specsavers.
So did I.
Really?
Oh. Yeah.
Well, how come it's I always go, there's a section in there, and the last time I went, I mean, they're more expensive now, but I think I always bought three pairs. I think last time it cost me, including the eye test, about 120 for the three pairs. So I get the cheapest that they've got. Well, I think this time you can get some for 25 or something. I think mine were 30 each or something like that. I don't know.
Well, I suppose there's a fair amount of vanity involved with, you know, what kind of glasses you buy, I suppose. But as I'm not eligible for, I'm not eligible for sort of free eye care, because the powers that should not be deem it that I earn too much, although I don't at all. I don't earn an awful lot at all. And me and my missus always maintain a very, very strong work-life balance, which involves living more than working. Well, preferably, you'd like it to be that way anyway. So I'm not entitled to free healthcare, and therefore, you know, no NHS glasses for me. So, it was a buy one, get one free offer as long as you spent over £70 on the frames. They didn't say that afterwards you'd be spending out on the lenses as well. So there you go, 185 quid later, and I got to wait 2 weeks for some glasses to come. But to be fair, my long distance sight is fine. It's just the typical old age thing of things up close. Yeah, when people put, here, have a look at this, and they put it right in front of me, and I have to have to pull it away and look at it from like arm's length half the time.
So, exactly the same with me. I can look, you know, where I look at my road, and I can see cars a distance away, and I can read the number plate. But yeah, you get something, and you're literally trying, you need your arm, it needs to be even longer to get it further away so you can see it, type of thing. But the problem is I don't want to depress you, but it'll get to a stage where you're in a shop and you pick up a CD or something, and every time you have to put them on, it gets really frustrating at first, because you've not had to do it before, you know?
Yeah.
And it's, I want to look at this. I don't know if I can be bothered to look at it, because I can't be bothered to get my glasses out, you know, because it's good to not have to wear them all the time, like you and I, but at the same time...
I'm going to ask the audience to put forward any suggestions of training glasses, because I am aware that there are such things that, essentially train your eyes to focus more. It's got to be like any other muscle in the body, Andy. If you exercise it enough, surely... other than damage to the lens, I'm sure You know, focusing surely must be a muscular thing. Is it not? I don't know. Answers on the back of a postcard, folks. And if you can spare me having to wear glasses on a regular basis, that would be great. So any suggestions would be welcome.
Well, I'll just say something that Dr. Lorraine Day said to me. Firstly, she said she had a some sort of, I don't know if it was a book or a video or something, but she'd actually sorted her own eyes out back to how they should be. But you had to spend time doing these different exercises every day. And she was now wearing glasses because she said she didn't have the time to do all the exercises needed to get the eyes back to how they should be. So don't know whether that works or not. She said she'd done it once and it worked. But one thing she did say is that she would only get magnification glasses. She said, once you start going down the optician's route and they measure everything up and all that, she said, then it starts, you know, taking your eyes in a certain direction. But if she could, I don't know whether that meant she was now wearing magnification glasses, but so if I'd have heard that years ago, I'd have probably gone down that line. But it's always difficult to know because, I don't like to say this, but Dr. Lorraine Day was adamant, and you probably remember this because it was one of the things she said a lot, that, you know, she knew that she wasn't going to go until Jesus Christ came back, and she's no longer with us, and I'm not aware of Jesus Christ having come back. So that doesn't mean that she was lying. It just means that I believe she was genuine in her belief, but she was mistaken. So I just wanted to throw that out
there.
Or
could it be, because I listened to one of your shows with her, and could it be the fact that, nobody gets to go until Jesus comes back? The dead will be risen and all that kind of, I'm sure that was on one of the shows. She said that, everyone is saved. He's going to come back and save everyone. Not just, so I thought that was the understanding I took from it, that, we're all here until he comes back, essentially. That's what I took from it, regardless of whether we're, living in our bodies or not. I think that was what I took from what she said, that we're all here until he comes back and we're raised and taken.
Could be. I might have interpreted it more literally and things like that. But it was she was a lovely person, got on very well with her, and it was always nice to speak to her, and I was never late when I spoke to her because she would be on with me 6 a.m. her time. Because she was in California. Yeah. 2 p.m. my time when I was recording the afternoon shows and doing the show every day of the year. I didn't feel guilty about that because she said that she was up early anyway. That's not right, actually. With her, I did make a provision. She did 7 o'clock, so that was the one show I recorded 3 o'clock my time, and all the others were 2 o'clock my time. My belief is she's in a better place anyway, but let's move on to, I mentioned last week my trip to the pub. I went out with my friend after last Sunday's show for my first drink in a pub in about 5 years.
And how was it?
Well, the first pub I went to was a Wetherspoons, and it was £5.65 for 2 pints of lager. I told my friend I would get the next round also, as he had taken the time to visit me, and it was a more expensive pub. Anyway, when I ordered the 2 lagers in this next more expensive pub, I had £8 ready, as I thought the barmaid said £7.65. And she just looked at me and said, £11.65. So well over £5 a pint. Your thoughts, Maleficus? Yeah.
You should try getting a drink in a holiday resort known as Newquay. You think that's expensive? Crikey. Yeah, you're looking at up to six or possibly more than £6 a pint down here.
Yeah.
So crazy stuff. Which is why in Cornwall there is a big push. There is the campaign for real ale down here in Cornwall. So the real ales are, you know, like people used to drink, not this mass processed, mass produced stuff that they use, you know, they brew chemically and all that kind of thing. No, real ales that are fermented over time and yada yada yada. And it's, you know, that's a big thing down here in Cornwall, as I believe it is up in the Midlands as well.
Yeah, that just reminded me, there's a half man, half biscuit song called Cameraman. about that. But, what else did I do? I moved all my CDs over from my room in my mum's house to my flat, and it all fits in the new shelving unit, which Amanda saw yesterday and thought was absolutely wonderful. I don't know why she liked it so much, but I won't need to hire space at a storage facility, which I initially thought would be the case. And I'm really quite happy because all... bringing over the hi-fi and the CDs and the, you know, books I mentioned, you know, the Tom Sharp and Enie Blight and all these strange things, they do actually look quite nice on the shelf because I've got the set together. And I have managed to fit them either on things I already had built in, or like with the shelving unit, there's all I had against that wall where it is was a bed and a bedside cabinet either side, and the bed obviously comes out a lot further from the wall than the shelving unit, but so does the bedside cabinet. So my point being is all this space I was not using, I just had in one area some beer cases of beer stacked up. They're now under the bed, so I've managed to get all this additional storage space without having to lose any of my other space in the apartment that I would, you know, walk around in or anything like that, as much as you can walk around in a 500 square foot flat. But what else was I going to say? Yeah, the other thing that I've been doing is, you know, what of my mum's do I want to keep? And there's really, I've been valuing some of my mum's possessions to see if they are worth leaving for the auctioneer to look at. But the problem is, while she's got stuff from all over the world, it's all literally the equivalent of a straw donkey from Spain. I mean, it's all tat. I looked a couple of things up on eBay thinking they might be worth a couple of hundred quid each. And one was going for 30 and the other 15. And these are both bulky items that would be a nightmare to post. Now, one of them is a sort of it's like a glass thermometer thing, but it's probably about 2 or 3 foot tall. It's thin, it's got a little stand, and it's got filled with water, and it's got all these different temperatures on balls or something. Somehow, I don't know.
Oh, yes, I can't remember what they call it. There's a particular type of thermometer. I can't remember what they call it, but the ball that is at the bottom of the stack is the temperature that the room is. Is that right?
Yeah, that's what it looks like.
And all the other ones sink to the bottom, yeah.
Yeah, and I thought, well, that's a bit colourful, might be quite nice and what have you. And, you know, it's a huge thing. And, I mean, I'm worried about getting it from her house to here in case I break it on the way, you know, how to wrap it up and all that. I've been wrapping stuff in bubble wrap that I keep reusing, getting my CDs over and all that, because I get them over in a big suitcase or a couple of suitcases and stuff. And, you know, I have a... I noticed a couple of the cases, CD cases are cracked on the front, and I've got spares anyway. I've got a load of new CDs that were 10 for a pound, Maleficus, in a charity shop, and they're things like really bizarre titles, but they're all still in their wrapping as well. So I thought, well, I'm not going to open them. I've just got them for the cases and the trays. You know, as soon as I need another case and tray, I'll just throw the contents of it away, you know, the CD and the inlay cover and what have you. You know, like 10p for a new case. So I used one of them to replace these things. It's a barometer thing. And the more controversial one is the one for £30 that I saw, that I thought would be a couple of hundred. And that's because it's a globe, so it might offend our flat Earth listeners, Maleficus.
You don't want to do that. It's a Galileo thermometer. That's what they call it, the glass ones. Invented by Galileo, I'm assuming.
Well, that's interesting, yeah, because the thing is that the globe, I was really surprised about this because I it's actually made of all the different countries they've put in with sort of different coloured stones, like minerals and stuff.
Oh, and, wow.
Yeah, and but I don't really, I'm sort of humming and hawing about it, whether I want it or not, but I was surprised at how low it was going. But I think I saw one in a charity shop near me, and that was only going for about 100. I thought this one might be a bit nicer and what have you. So these are the only things I can think of. And then all the other stuff, it was always, say, when I say straw donkey, it was like, you know, it was a bit of a cut above, but it still falls in the same ballpark. Like, if you go to, we went to Greece a lot of times and Turkey. And so you go out there and you get all their, you know, the certain sort of pottery they do out there, Maleficus and stuff. And, you know, you can buy a little plate or something, might bring that back. And, you know, but then they also went and they bought, you know, little things that are like serving dishes with lids, not that big, but trying to describe it, something like that with a lid that you wouldn't actually use for food, but, you know, getting on for that sort of size, all painted up and stuff. But it still not doesn't go for much. Do you know what I mean? So they might have paid 20, 25, 30 pounds or whatever, it's equivalent, whatever today for that. But it's got no real value. You know, you'd still find that in a charity shop and, you know, maybe be a tenner. Something like that.
Yeah.
So they're not going to touch it at like auctioneer. It's the sort of thing. This is why I take a lot of stuff to the charity shop. Two reasons. One, it's my mum's preferred charity shop. She's registered it with Gift Aid. And so, you know, they'll get money. She'll be happy. And I tell her about it. So I've taken some stuff there and when I see her each week. And also, at some point, I'm going to have to pay for it to be taken away. Because it's going to be a house clearance that does it, you know? So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, how times move on. Different chapters, isn't it, Andy? You know?
It's a shame, really. I mean, I mentioned the other week about getting rid of most of these things I've had in my things to keep stuff, you know?
Yeah.
I looked at it and I thought, why would I ever look at these things again? And, you know, it amazes me, you get these people like, I remember thinking when Michael Palin bought his diaries out, and it was while he was Monty, and it's like, how did this guy know that, you know, at some point he was going to publish these diaries? Seemed very odd to me, you know? Do you know what I mean? It was like, why would you keep a diary of doing all this stuff so every day you write up what you did with Monty Python, or was it just for his own personal use and then he thought he'd publish it? But
I mean, I do tend to think that, you know, writing a diary is a dying tradition. Not many people do it anymore, but a lot of people used to do it. In fact, you know, a lot of our historical accounts, you know, wartime historical accounts and things like that, all comes from people keeping diaries. And in actual fact, diaries were that sort of mainstream practice back in the day, that they had to create laws in the military so that only officers could keep, you know, could write things down and keep a diary. In fact, I've got a book called Blood Red Snow, and it's written by a chap who was a Lancer in the German army on the Eastern Front, and he wasn't allowed to keep a diary. But what he used to do is write little scraps of things that happened and stuff it into his uniform. And the beautiful thing about that book is that he and his wife separated. They got married and then separated, you know, well after the war. And his wife moved to America and took a load of stuff. And anyway, or he moved away or whatever. And his daughter contacted him years later, having discovered all these bits of paper stuffed into one of his uniforms and put it together in chronological order and tracked him down and gave it all to him. And he ended up turning it into a book. So if anyone is interested, Blood Red Snow, that book wouldn't be here if it wasn't for the tradition of keeping diaries. So, yeah, I don't know. I think it's just, he's probably, yeah, it was a natural thing to do, and he's probably thought afterwards, yeah, I might publish those, I might take a few of the naughty bits out and publish the rest of them.
And what was the author's name, Blood Red Snow?
Oh, crikey. Hang on, let me just go and dig it out for you. Mind out, cat. Cat's on my lap.
Okay. Right. While you're doing that.
Right, here it is. His name is Gunter K. Koscherek. So that's spelled K-O-S-C-H-O-R-R-E-K.
I'm not going to write that in the show description. I can't be bothered to write all that out. So, folks, if you are interested, just wind back and write it down.
Yeah, or just send me an email and I'll send you a link. No problem.
What's your email address, Maleficus?
Maleficus, M-A-L-L-I-F-I-C-U-S, @outlook.com.
Very simple.
Yeah, it's a fantastic read. Fantastic read, if you're into that sort of thing.
Excellent. Okay, so next, I was checking my mother's email, as I do every week, and she received this email from the UK Parliament. Dear Christine Hitchcock, you recently signed the petition Reform Highways Maintenance Funding to Reflect Traffic Volume. On Wednesday the 24th of April, Anthony Magnall MP will lead a debate in Parliament on pothole repairs and highway maintenance. To inform the debate, he would like to hear about your experiences of potholes and their impact. He may quote your contribution directly during his debate. Find out more and share your experience with him by midday on Tuesday the 23rd of April. Videos of the debate, the transcript of what was said, and other relevant material will be accessible after the debate on the webpage above. What are Westminster Hall debates? Westminster Hall is the second chamber of the House of Commons. Westminster Hall debates give MPs an opportunity to raise local or national issues and receive a response from a government minister. Any MP can take part in a Westminster Hall debate. Debates in Westminster Hall take place on general debate motions expressed in neutral terms. These motions are worded that this House has considered a specific matter. This means that Westminster Hall debates don't end in a vote or a particular action or decision. Thanks, the petitions team, UK Government and Parliament. Now, interestingly, you have to get to 10,000 for this even to be looked at, but it had only got to about 5,800 something, and it had closed in June, I think, of 2022. So we're nearly, it didn't get up to the level that they have to look at it, but they don't have to debate it. Even at 100,000, we talked about that, they consider whether they debate it, they can still refuse. But this hadn't even reached the 10,000, and they decided that they were going to have it a debate, although not in the Houses of Parliament. You've heard the thing, I'm not going to repeat myself like I always do. But I found that interesting. So, Maleficus, I guess some of these petitions work, well, sort of, but what are your thoughts? Over to you.
Well, we'll discuss it if we feel like it, regardless of whether you've met the target or not. That's what I take from that, Andy.
No, that's interesting. I just thought it was worth, when I saw that, I was like, shall I send this to myself and mention it on the show? Will it be interesting to people? And I thought, well, there are other people, they do these petitions, and I don't know any of them that have actually, they've got a response back. And this was a sort of response, and I just found it interesting that this was how, you know, an example of a response, because all the ones I've ever seen have never, you know, got to the level to generate a response. But let's have a look at the People's Voice shows in the last week, which you can find on their Rumble channel. This one was earlier today, I listened to. Sickening tape of Bernie Sanders' raping boy surfaces in new Pizzagate files. And they talk about how, you know, there's allegations by different people being interviewed. I don't think they're being interviewed on the show, but they're clips of them being interviewed somewhere that I think Sean, who presents it, plays on the show. And they're going down the lines of, you don't get anywhere if they haven't got dirt on you. And we've talked about this, and I'm thinking that more and more, that when you look at the absolute shocking way certain governments and leaders behave towards their own citizens, we gave examples of you know, Canada and Australia during the lockdowns, what they were doing. I mean, there were people I heard at the time claiming they'd had directed energy weapons used on them and that. And you think, you know, how is this possible? And the only answer can be that in the past, sort of someone in that position would be like, well, I'm not doing that to my own citizens. This could cause all sorts of problems. And actually, you'd have more of a problem if you didn't do it based upon what they would do to you with the dirt they have on you. And that's why I think we are where we are. And that was an interesting show. Probably the best of the week is one from a couple of days ago. UN says dangerous conspiracy theorists must be punished like terrorists. And that was an interesting one that I saved. Then we've got WEF Insider warns steaks will soon be made from human shit. And then finally, 6 days ago, we've got Mel Gibson, Hollywood pedos using Diddy to cover up horrific crimes of satanic cabal. So there's the four titles from this week. And if you want to check them out, they're on the Rumbles channel for the People's Voice that's got over 60,000 followers. So now it's time for this week's The People Who Failed to Join Sven Longshanks in Prison and How They Did It segment of the show, which is brought to you courtesy of the British justice system. Sven Longshanks was sent to prison for 2.5 years on May the 15th, 2023, for comments he made on his radio show, the archives of which are still available on RadioAlbion.com, a station you could simply stop listening to if you chose to do so, in the same way I stopped listening to the BBC over a year ago when I chose not to renew my television licence. So here are this week's people who failed to join Sven Longshanks in prison and how they did it. First up, Hales Owen News. 1 in 3 repeat knife offenders in West Midlands spared jail. Next, Northwich and Winsford Guardian. Northwich man avoids jail after burgling and beating elderly dad. Next, Salisbury Journal. Firefighters charity manager who stole £18,000 avoids jail. Next, South Wales, Argus. Teen 17 rapes a girl 14 in Newport but avoids jail. And finally, Daily Mail, drunk businesswoman 39 who glassed a pub drinker after he wrongly guessed she was 43, is spared jail after female judge says one person's banter may be insulting to others. Whilst I could present many, many more headlines, that concludes this week's The People Who Failed to Join Sven Longshanks in Prison and How They Did It segment. But Lifkus, do you have any headlines for us before we close it up? Over to you.
Yeah, that last one, wow, what a statement to make. I'm going to see if I can better you on this one this week. Right, not that it's a competition and not that it's necessarily anything I come out with is not necessarily quote-unquote better, but you get what I'm saying. So Times and Star, drug driver over 22 times the cocaine limit on the A66 spared jail. Yes, a drug driver who was 22 times over the cocaine limit on a suspended sentence order has been spared jail. Wow, how about that? Already in trouble and still spared jail. Fraudster who cashed 50k of church checks spared prison for the sake of his blind wife. Mum avoids jail over child neglect while three times over the drink drive limit. Padgate pervert spared jail despite possessing child sex abuse images. Glamorous teenager who led unmarked police car on 88 miles an hour police chase across town while under the influence of alcohol is spared jail after she blamed her dangerous driving on her state of mind. Glamorous? I'm not sure. Anyway, that's a matter of opinion. Feel free to go and look at the article yourself. Telford monkey dust addict spared jail for a theft spree. And here you go, you mentioned this as well. Was this the Sourbridge news? 1 in 3 repeat knife offenders in West Midlands spared jail?
I got Hales Owen news, which I'm probably pronouncing incorrectly. But yeah, it probably all links back to the same source, Maleficus.
It's that same source that I mentioned last week, isn't it? That they're peddling out and peddling out and peddling out. Yeah. So how about this one? This might may or may not beat yours, Andy. Sky News. This is police handling of U.S. driver who fled the U.K. after crash left nurse unable to walk. Not acceptable. Isaac Calderon returned to America after a collision in Herefordshire that left Elizabeth Donohoe with two broken ankles and a fractured sternum. So this chap, this Isaac chap, was allowed to escape the UK despite the fact that he'd caused life-changing injuries somewhere else. So although that's not strictly avoiding jail, Andy, in the UK, it is avoiding jail in the UK. And here you go, how about this one? Child rapist can stay in the UK after arguing being deported would harm his mental health. So there you go. There's my avoiding jail-esque articles this week. Back to you.
Yeah, and I think that the reason that one was then finally for me, I mean, we've seen this in America. Someone says someone something doesn't like and they might get killed for it. And if what that person said that got them killed wasn't politically correct, there's been instances where they've been let off. Well, you know, the person shouldn't have said it, like they deserve to die for saying something. And that's what I see creeping in here. You know, someone says something about a woman's age and he deserves a glass in the face. Are you serious? Well, obviously they're serious because these are the rulings that are coming down. And it just goes to show how both sides were malefic. Sven Longshanks said something that they didn't like. He ended up in jail. Someone else on the street says something. Oh, well, if that's, you know, we deem that politically incorrect, then again, they deserve any punishment. So the attitude around the world is we want to crack down on what people say. That's the most important to what these people in control have. They don't want you saying things that they don't want said. And so therefore, anyone who says them is liable to any outcome completely disproportionate to uttering words. It was always sticks and stones shall break my bones, but words will never hurt me. Well, now it seems to be absolutely the opposite, that words and things written online are the most important thing for the police to look at over and above anything else, which was completely not the case when I was a police officer, 20 years ago. Okay, so any thoughts on that, Maleficus, before we move on?
Well, yeah, no, you're absolutely right. So we've read out all those articles, folks, and Sven Longshanks is still in prison for speaking. I normally finish up by saying that. So, yeah, there we go.
No, you're absolutely right. So anyway, as of December the 1st, 2022, we have a total of 2,362 people having died after taking the fake vaccine and 474,018 people having been injured after taking the fake vaccine. These figures were published on the British government's website page entitled Coronavirus COVID-19 Vaccine Adverse Reactions and were aggregated from the totals of the five vaccine analysis prints linked to on that page. I say were because the British government are no longer publishing these, as whilst their website page still exists, the five vaccine analysis prints have now been deleted from it. So I have absolutely no idea of the official figures today. Okay, so now let's go over to Maleficus for his The Great Distraction segment of the show. Maleficus, what have you got for us today?
Well, to kick off the great distraction, we have had a big distraction in the UK this week. If I say runaway cavalry horses, Andy, what does that say to you?
Yeah, funny enough, I mentioned this. I was out with Amanda yesterday, and I said, "Oh, Amanda, did you hear that about those horses that ran off? Because there was something with a bang or something, and I talked about." Spooking the horses and what have you, but it was building work, I believe, and they were banging around, and I just found it strange that one of them had certainly run off before while they were still being used. Well, I didn't get other ones in, but back to you.
Well, I, as you know, I work once a week with a lady who breeds horses. She even many years ago met the Queen through her horse breeding and all that kind of thing. So she knows a thing or two about horses. And because my MP3 player is playing up at work, I can only use the radio on it, which meant I had to spend a whole day listening to the enemy war transmissions, which was just grueling, Andy, but it was better than silence, only just. And this whole thing came up about, should horses still be used in the military? They're not used on operations anymore. It's purely ceremonial and blah, 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 blah. So I asked the lady that I work for, I'm not going to mention her name. I asked the lady and I said, so what do you think then? Should horses still be used in the military? And she looked at me and she went, well, not grey ones. I said, what is that? And she said, have you not seen any of the footage? I said, no. She said, well, if it wouldn't have looked nearly as bad if they just used black horses. She said, all that's happened is inexperienced riders. She said, the horse may have jumped, got startled, because apparently a truck tipped, you know, 8 tons of aggregate in a pile somewhere, and the whooshing sound spooked the horse. All that would have happened is that, she said, the horse would have slipped slightly, which would have, you know, obviously thrown the rider off. The rider's, you know, fallen off. And she said it's just bad riding practice. She said that, you know, these people should be able to keep these, you know, with the train. These horses can stand there next to cannons while cannons are being shot, Andy, for ceremonial purposes. So a little bit of aggregate being tipped out of a lorry should be nothing. She said it's purely bad riding experience. So there you go. That's the first bit of The Great Distraction. I thought I'd get that covered. I just liked her comment about not grey ones.
Well, the other thing as well, it makes you be interesting to see what their recruitment policies are, because if she's saying that the reason it happened was due to inexperience of the person in charge of the horse, one could argue that they're not recruiting based on a meritocracy. Back to you.
Yeah, well, you could definitely, you know, look at it in those terms, without a doubt. So anyway, on with The Great Distraction. Folks, be afraid, be very afraid, particularly if you're in the UK. The Mirror is reporting that UK health officials warn of spike in tropical diseases being brought home from holiday. Yes, isn't that always the way? What about all these migrants coming across? Aren't they bringing anything across with them? Ought we not to watch them too? Anyway, moving on, we've got a whole lot of stuff this week about the mRNA cancer vaccine that is bespoke to each person that they manufacture it for. There's a bit of a worry for you. Anyway, here you go. The smoking ban in the UK, Andy, would have many benefits from public health. So listeners overseas who aren't aware, they are talking that people born after a certain age in this country will never be able to buy cigarettes. So it says UK smoking ban would have many benefits for public health, but only if it's effectively implemented. And then the next article I've got here, this one's from the Mail Online. Forget the age-old smoker's cough. Now doctors are seeing patients with vapor's cough. And it can sound very different. So, yeah, they'll ban smoking. Can you still buy vapes? Yes, of course you can. It's just... Right, anyway, moving on. BBC article here. Why are we so ill? The working age health crisis. I don't know, folks. Why are we so ill? Why is there a quote-unquote sick note culture here in the UK? Is it possibly because about 3 years ago you could get as long as you wanted off of work, as long as you produced a positive COVID test? Sort of setting people up for a fall there, methinks. Talking of COVID and tests and all that kind of thing, and the fact that the World Health Organization, the UK Health Security Agency is obviously very, very on the ball. Article here from The Guardian. Unsustainable. UK predicted to see a 50% spike in strokes by 2035. And another one here from the Mail Online, warning over explosion of strokes in the next decade. Analysis projects a 50% increase in the deadly events amid UK's obesity crisis. I would hazard a guess that it might not just be people getting fat. In fact, with the cost of living crisis, the idea of people being able to get fat is being restricted on a day-to-day basis. So here you go. A new generation artificial sweetener found in fizzy drinks, chewing gum and ice cream can damage the gut. Are they still going to use it? Of course they are. Pesticides found in up to half of children's apple juice bottles could lead to Parkinson's, new study suggests. Are they going to keep spraying the fruit? Of course they are. And finally, here you go, folks, gearing you up for the future, and there'll be more on this later. The future of healthcare fits on your wrist. Experts foresee an explosive growth in healthcare with AI-powered wearables. Yay. Let's just trust our health to machines and software, shall we? There ends the great distraction. Andy, back to you.
Thank you, Maleficus. Great job. And now it's time for some of this week's Daily Mail articles that didn't end up behind their Mail Plus paywall. First up, exclusive. Why would I want a job? Shameless benefit scroungers in seaside town boast they chill out and enjoy life while claiming thousands a month of your cash as 10 million go unemployed and 4,000 a day sign off sick in work-shy Britain. Next, openly Jewish campaigner warns London is becoming a police-enforced Jew-free zone after Met officer threatened him with arrest at Palestine protest. Scotland Yard Chief Mark Rowley faces calls to quit amid furious row. Next, Britain, who aided Russia, is charged with terrorism offences, but his identity is protected on national security grounds. Next, exclusive. Britain's Got Talent burper, Kimberly Winter, will prove she can belch louder than a motorbike if she makes live shows and reveals which fizzy drink sparks her bizarre act. Next, Alec Baldwin furiously smacks anti-Israel protester's phone after she hounds him to say Free Palestine on camera and asks, "Why did you kill that lady?" inside New York City coffee shop. Next, Orpheus Pledger, home and away star, is arrested after sparking a three-day manhunt, with video emerging of the actor allegedly dragging a woman to the ground and stomping on her head. He wants looking at. Next, a love story in the death camp, guilt, horror, shame, and the power of passion come together in poignant Holocaust drama, The Tattooist of Auschwitz. Next, illegal school teaches children that I'm a Celebrity is a Bill Gates-inspired plot to prepare population to eat cockroaches after the Great Reset. And finally, Sadiq Khan issues grovelling apology for suggesting Chief Rabbi's criticism of his Gaza ceasefire call was down to his Muslim-sounding name. Okay, that's almost it for me. So, Maleficus, please close out your contribution to today's show with your news roundup of the week. The floor is yours.
Okie dokie. Something I meant to add in with the great distraction there was there's an article from the Mail Online. And you can all relax, folks, really, because it's out of your hands, this means. Autism and gender dysphoria are caused by hormones that babies are exposed to in the womb. Experts claim nothing to do with any external influences around the globe. Nothing to do with any of that. It's all from the womb. So you can all relax. If you're having a bit of gender dysphoria, yeah, it's your mum's fault, basically. Yeah, naughty old mum. Anyway, this tying into that, really, so it's probably good that I left it out of the great distraction. So tying into that, there's a University of York has a report calls for urgent action to boost children's mental health and support through schools. I couldn't agree more. One of our listeners, I haven't asked if I can mention it, but one of our listeners, so I won't mention the name, sent me a meme earlier this week, Andy. And you know what? I say this quite often, but not quite so eloquently. And here it is. Maybe we're all depressed, sick, and anxious because we've been ripped out of nature and thrust into artificial worlds filled with fake food, blue light, synthetic drugs, BS jobs, maybe we're not sick. Maybe we're just trying to fit into a reality that we're not meant to live in. Maybe the answer is simply returning to nature. You look at what's going on with children's mental health now, I suggest that that is probably a good step in the right direction. So anyway, moving on. The Register.com, which is a newspaper, I don't know whether that's a worldwide one or whether it's a UK one, but it says here, UK's investigatory powers bill to become law despite tech world opposition. Only minor changes from original proposals that kicked up a privacy storm. So the UK's contentious investigatory powers bill, 2024, has officially received the King's nod of approval and will become law. Dubbed the Snoopers Charter by critics, it aims to widen digital surveillance powers of the existing Investigatory Powers Act of 2016, used by UK intelligence services, the police, the government, and some emergency services. Before the latest amendments come into force, the IPA already allowed authorised parties to gather swathes of information on UK citizens to tap into telecoms activity, phone calls, and SMS texts. It goes on and on and on, this article, but if you're interested in finding out more about that, do give me a shout or just go to the Register. .com and have a look for the investigatory powers bill. So to add weight to these words, there is also a government page on the on said Investigatory Powers Act, and it says here, investigatory powers enhanced to keep people safer. That's simply the title. Another government page here. I've been finding a lot of government stuff recently. So another government page here. AI and NHS England to sign collaboration charters to support the use of AI in the NHS. Remember me saying earlier, folks, that the future of healthcare will fit on your wrist? Let's just rely on software and machines to deal with our physical health. Great stuff. So that's being written into legislation in the UK. So I like this one. This tickled me, Andy. So again, if anyone wants these links, these are all gov.uk links. So UK condemns environmental damage caused by Russia's war, UK statement to the OSCE. Followed up by another government page saying, Prime Minister to announce largest ever military aid package to send to Ukraine on visit to Poland. So nothing like perpetuating that environmental damage, folks. Well done. How duplicitous can you possibly get? Dear, oh dear. So another government page here. Innovating across the Atlantic. New agreement for the UK and US innovation liaison officers. Agreement signed at Strategic Command Conference for Liaison Officers in J-Hub and U.S. Defense Innovation Unit. This basically means that they're going to be sharing information. Let's just put it that way. They're going to have people stationed in each camp, both camps, so that they can keep an eye on what's going on in both camps. So the UK can't do things without the US knowing, and the US can't do things without the UK knowing. So apparently so, allegedly so. So another government page here, UK and Italy to build on cooperation to stop migrant crossings. This is rather like the UK and Thailand doing the same thing. Aren't you supposed to claim asylum in the first country you arrive in, not travel halfway across Europe and claim asylum in the, say, the fifth or the seventh country you arrive in? Not sure. Anyway, so to end on, I'll tell you what, here we go. I had a little look at climate stuff earlier, because climate, it's all, you know. Here we go. Climate leaders debate goal for controlling global warming. A new UN program highlights the disconnect between climate messaging and the growing possibility of overshooting key global warming targets. Oh, dear. Net zero doesn't mean cutting out stakes and flights, top climate advisor says. Nah, doesn't for the moment. Doesn't for the moment. Rather like the EU saying, well, we've got this new digital currency for the EU, but we're not going to get rid of cash. apparently, Andy, as well, Why climate change is heating up Europe faster than the rest of the world? I say favoritism. California goes to war with big oil over climate change. Hang on a minute. Wasn't the first Earth Summit paid for by big oil? Anyway, so I was sent, this is one that you might want to put down on the show notes, Andy. I was sent this by one of our listeners. Thank you. Not going to mention your name, but you will know who you are. And I will be getting back to you this week. CLINTL.org, CL Intel, Climate Intel, I'm assuming that is. And there is a link here, which I will send you, Andy, to put in the show note links, which you will appreciate. There is no climate emergency. So with all the fear porn, and all the smoke and mirrors and bluff and bluster being put out by the mainstream media, kindly go to this site for a little bit of sanity and pass it on to any normies, because in actual fact, it's a brilliant site for that. I hadn't stumbled across it before. So again, listener, you know who you are. Thank you for sending that on. And I've sent that out to an awful lot of people so far. So it's a very useful link. And finally, from me, Andy, and this is a bit of a feel-good story for you all. This might be a little bit tongue-in-cheek. BBC could get more funding to project the UK's values across the world. Well, I suggest it's probably the BBC's values, not necessarily the UK's. But there we go. Back to you, Andy.
Thank you very much, Maleficus. Yes, and I've just opened that up. I'll include that link in the post for the show. Looks very interesting. People who are behind it, I'll just quickly scan down. So anyway, last item. Daily Mail headline. Woman wheels a corpse into a bank and tries to get him to sign off a loan in her name while holding his head up in front of suspicious staff who ask why he looks very pale. On that bombshell, you have been listening to The Limeys, episode 165, The Students Are Revolting. We Limeys will be back with you next Sunday. Peter is on a speaking tour, so I'll be back with you all on Saturday. And until then, folks, thank you for listening. Have a wonderful week, and bye for now.